situation with my son. Well, he was just not filling out his college applications, and it was driving me nuts. And he says to me, he's like, Mom, you just need to know that the more you talk to me about this, the less I want to do it.
Navigating how you're going to approach issues with your teen is difficult, and that's Nina Rosner. She's one of our guests today on Focus on the Family. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Fuller.
John, being a parent of teens is tough. I think both of us can speak from experience, but especially when they challenge those boundaries and make poor choices and act disrespectfully toward us, the parents, right? I mean, that is
what's... Those are the most trying times.
It's what sets us off as moms and dads. And today we're going to help you understand a vital need of your teen, and that is to receive. That's what I said, receive respect from you, the parent. And this may sound counterintuitive. Maybe you want respect from your teen, but I think you'll be intrigued by some of the insights our guests are going to share today.
The book we're talking about today is With All Due Respect. And as I said, our guests include Nina Rosner and also Debbie Hitchcock, who have together written this book. They work together at Greater Impact Ministries. And relevant to the discussion, Nina has three children and Debbie has four. They have walked this talk here, Jim.
That's right. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be here.
Nina, you still have teenagers, mm-hmm. and Debbie, yours are in their 20s, so you guys are experienced parents. That's the point, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you've lived it. You've lived it.
We're living it now.
You're not childless talking about parenting, right?
Absolutely.
You are pros. But speak to that moment when your sweet adolescent is now becoming a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, for me, it was just this defining moment of this isn't working. You know, the way we were doing things works with little kids, but it doesn't work with people who are trying to become adults and separate in a healthy way. And my husband actually had the insight where I was about to, I wasn't actually going to kill my oldest son, but I had thoughts that were probably not super holy about him. He was making me crazy, right? So I was talking to my husband and Jim says to me, you know what? He needs respect. He's trying to become a man. And you're treating him like he's still 8 years old.
And that made sense to you for some
reason. Yeah, I could get that. Yeah.
Some moms, it bounces off of them.
Yeah.
And some dads. I mean, I don't want to say just moms, but mm-hmm. parents, that kind of statement from the other observing spouse mm-hmm. may not go down well. Mm-hmm. How do you open yourself up to that kind of reflection that maybe we're not doing what we need to do?
Ideally, you both are on the same page and you have the same value system where you're making similar decisions. You know, so if mom says something, dad would say the same thing. So you get the same ideas there. And then if you collaborate on a decision, then both of you support it. No matter how much pushback the kid's giving you, you are aligned together. So you have to be, because I can't even think of a more stressful time than parenting teenagers than your marriage gets, hammered.
True. That's all the pillow talk. Gene and I, that's true. I mean, you know, I think the other areas of our marriage are in a great place. But when it comes to how do we approach this with our teenagers, that's usually where you're thinking maybe you're going to say goodnight and get some sleep, and it's, I've got something I got to tell you about the kids. And you're going,
absolutely.
No, don't do that. Debbie, how did you find that doable with four teenagers? They're now in their 20s, but you must have at that time had tweens and teens all at the same time.
Oh, we did. And I think the thing for us was the fact that we thought we were on the same page. You know, we had this great marriage going in, and then all of a sudden you realize, wait a minute, you have a totally different idea of how this thing should be handled than I do. And it was, how do we pull it together? And that's when the marriage stress really just starts coming in.
And in that regard, how do you suggest when the one spouse is observing things that could go a little better if we did it this way, but the other spouse just doesn't want to hear it? I mean, you know, you're not seeing it. But I don't know, what does that look like for the parents who are struggling, but they can't talk it out? What do you do?
Well, it's interesting, because what we found is that a lot of times parents don't realize how much their childhood plays into their parenting. So we don't get this manual that says, here's what you need to do with that kid. And it ends up happening is you just react rather than actually doing what it is, you know, you should be thinking about doing. And so what we found is that, at least for my husband and I, we came from totally different childhood experiences. And for me, I was the one that was a little more hesitant and, that's the rule. We really need to push it. And my husband traveled a lot. Uh-huh. So for him, he wants to come home, on the weekends and have fun with the kids.
Right.
And I've been dealing with all the stuff.
Right.
And it's like, okay, we need to deal with this, but, he doesn't
want to. Did you ever say, okay, Mr. Fun Guy? maybe that's just my own experience.
Yeah.
But it's so true, and that's so typical of husbands who travel quite a bit. I mean, that to me is a common – and yes, Gene and I have had that conversation. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to Gary Chapman, and he had a great recommendation for marriage. He said, go home and ask your spouse what's one thing you can do. Not your spouse. One thing you can do to improve your marriage. And I went home and did that with Jean. She said, I've got two. I thought, wow, so fast. How long have you had these? But the first one was related to the kids, which is you're so spontaneous. You'll come home and say, hey, let's take the kids to Disneyland this weekend. But you've set it in front of them. And mm-hmm. I've got to be the downer and say, mm-hmm. We can't logistically pull that off. Mm-hmm. And she says, it makes me feel like I'm the bad parent. So we have to be mindful of that. I've done a lot better, John. I want you to know.
You haven't gone to Disney for a long time.
And thankfully, we can't remember either one of us what the second thing was. So hopefully I've improved in that area. But it's true. You have to be on that same page.
Right.
Or you can really do damage to the kids, too.
Well, and the other thing that we found in our parenting is that, it's the bedroom talk, it's okay, this is what's going on with this kid. And as we did that, my husband and I would not be on the same page,
right.
But what I would do is I would say, I really think this would be helpful if you'd handle it this way. And at times he was like, no, I'm just going to fix the problem. Hmm. So the next morning we would get up, he would have time to sleep on it. So overnight he would kind of change his tune. And would go in the next morning. He liked to be the dad when he was home of getting up and fixing breakfast for the kids.
Oh, and what's your husband's name?
Oh yeah, Dave was great about that.
This is my same thing.
Yeah.
Every Saturday cooking breakfast.
Oh yeah. He would get up, fix breakfast for the kids, and that was their time because he was busy or traveling and get home late while the kids are off doing their activities. And so for him, it was one of those things where, he'd get up and he'd go, your mom and I talked about da-da-da-da, whatever it was last night. And here's how we're going to handle it.
Mm.
And so then I would come in later. He's at work. And I would say to the kids, your dad and I talked about this and I'm really sorry. And they would go, well, dad already said. And it was like, okay, wait a minute. We don't know what we're doing here.
Hmm.
And so he's fixing it. He thinks he's doing what I want him to do. And yet we just weren't on the same page.
Yeah. Well, and that's so typical, being on that same page. Now, in one way, and this may sound odd, but for the single parent, we don't want to exclude those folks because many listen to the program and they're improving their parenting ability, those kinds of things. But, they're there as well, and I mm-hmm. want to acknowledge that. How do they have a different kind of challenge? I mean, they're on the same page because it's only one page.
Right. Yeah.
But in that context, how do they stay consistent and maintain that healthy relationship with their kids?
Yeah, it's, when you look at what are you doing, are you taking care of yourself? Because it's exhausting to be the only person handling all of those things.
It really is a two-person job.
It is a two-person job. I mean, God was right about that. That's why he created it that way. And so if you're not surrounding yourself with other people and having people link arms with you while you're doing it, and if you're not taking care of yourself in some way, especially during the tween and teen years, it just fries you.
Do you, as a single parent, would you look for that support, that help,
mm-hmm.
Maybe within your church?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm thinking of the mom, and I know there's more single parent dads than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of that is, particularly for that single parent mom, you have a son mm-hmm. or sons, and you're looking mm-hmm. for that person. Should I turn to the church and say, where can I find help for, teaching him I don't know how to throw a baseball
mm-hmm.
or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, my husband has been great about being that dad
for others.
Oh,
that's good.
And, we had a mom in our church that she had a teenage boy that just happened to be on the same baseball team with my son. And, he needed geometry help. And so my husband was at McDonald's with him, you know, one morning a week doing geometry.
And would that work for you, John? Would you be able to?
Yeah, I can't do geometry.
Yeah. I wouldn't do the geometry, but that's okay. But that's a wonderful example
of
being involved in other people's lives.
Right.
And your kids reacted well to that.
Oh, absolutely.
That's good.
And, you know, we let them know, hey, this is important.
You're listening to Focus on the Family. Today we have our two special guests, Nina Rosner and Debbie Hitchcock, who have written a book, With All Due Respect. Nina, I would think, and I'll throw this one to you, and certainly Debbie, jump in, but the I would think one of the high-rated teen-tween issues is this area of disrespect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first of all, let's speak to the why. Is it normal? Is it healthy or unhealthy? And I'm sure you can define those lines for us. But then how do we help our tweens and teens get a hold of this?
Yeah.
How do you go about identifying it, then addressing it with your child?
Well, if you're very rules-based and, you know, perfectionistic about everything being done a certain way, you're going to have a lot more conflict. And we have to realize that these people are becoming adults and they're trying to figure out who they are.
Set that environment, though. Why, particularly, if you're bent in that direction, you know, you're a black and white person, high regard for rules, you know, that fits many Christian households because we're trying to follow the Lord. We're trying to live up to His commandments. We're trying to live life in such a way. Yet it is a crippling factor when you're trying to parent these people that are trying to do it their own way. So somebody who once said to me, you know, God is a God of teenagers. All of us are teenagers in God's view.
Yeah.
We're all trying to control our own lives and do things differently than He would like us to do them. I think it's a great perspective to think of our Heavenly Father in that way. How much of a teenager are you to Him?
Yeah.
And then when you look at it, but speak to that, what is normal and what becomes unhealthy?
So we should expect conflict during these years. We should expect some pushback. It's very normal. And they're going to do it disrespectfully sometimes because they're hormonal. And that's not their fault.
So that's not just an excuse.
Right. And their brain doesn't work right when they're hormonal. Yeah, it just doesn't. And they're not getting sleep and they're emotional over friend stuff. So they're aliens. Okay. They're not that cute little 6-year-old anymore. Yes. So we have to have a lot of grace for that. And then we have to understand that, first of all, the part of their brain that is common sense is not developed yet until they're like 25 years old. So they're not going to think through things. They're not going to be logical. So we have to have a lot of grace, first of all. And then we have to model respectful behavior for them, even when they're behaving badly.
Yeah, that's what caught me in the book, that idea that they need to see respect in order to know how to be respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to, again, put an exclamation point around that, because most parents will say, what?
Yeah.
Just do as I say, not necessarily what I do.
And if we do that, then what we're saying is that I'm in charge of you. And what I really want is an independent individual that has his own set of values and makes his own decisions. And he has to navigate choices and fail sometimes so that he can figure that out. And if I'm making all of his choices for him, when he goes to college, he's going to go haywire. Or when he gets out from under my thumb, he's going to go figure it out in unhealthy ways.
Debbie, how do we as a parent, how do we measure whether we're being respectful to our teens, bite my lip, or not, if we're being disrespectful? How do we take an inventory of our attitude toward them that may be actually contributing significantly to their disrespect?
Well, I think it's seeing what our kids are doing. You know, if our kids are being disrespectful to us, it's time for us to stop and go, okay, is there something that I'm doing that's being disrespectful to them, to my spouse?
Now, that's not a natural thing for a parent to do.
No, it isn't. It's very, very difficult. And what I have discovered is that sometimes, you know, it's not until you have this explosion that takes place that you go, oh, wait a minute, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And we step back, hopefully, and say, okay, what do we need to be doing differently? Mm-hmm. We forget the relationship piece.
Mm-hmm.
We forget that we need to be looking at them and taking these conflict situations and going, oh, opportunity to teach.
Yeah.
We forget that.
Well, and you're both moms. And again, I don't want to generalize, but speak to the parent, whether they're the dad or the mom, that has that high regard for the rules, that if we slip up here, they're going to learn such poor habits that we're going to lose control of this child. The Lord, they'll be a prodigal child. And there can be such fear that mm-hmm. grips a parent because their teenager is not turning in their homework all the time. And we leapfrog
right.
to the fact that that's going to put them on a path of high-risk behavior. And, you know, yeah. you start imagining these things, mm-hmm. and then you start amping up the shrillness of your parenting. Mm-hmm. And it's a dead-end road, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And it pushes them the other direction.
You get yeah. the opposite response
exactly.
that you're hoping for.
Yeah, we push them the other direction because they need to figure out who they are separate from us as adults. And that's when they're starting that. And if we are heavy-handed in that, I had a situation with my son. Well, he was just not filling out his college applications, and it was driving me nuts. And
you probably reminded him about that a few times, huh?
maybe a few, yeah.
A day?
Yeah, pretty much. And he says to me, he's like, Mom, you just need to know that the more you talk to me about this, the less I want to do it.
Okay, explain that, because I see that with my kids. Mm-hmm. The more I'm into them with the issue I want mm-hmm. clarified or them to act on, there is a tendency for them to go deaf.
Yeah.
And in order to show you that I'm not listening to you, I'm not going to do what you're asking me to do.
Exactly.
Why does that mechanism exist? I mean, why can't they just do what we've asked them to do? Because that's what a good kid will do.
I think that is from birth. You know, a two-year-old, what's the first thing they learn to say?
No.
No. And in some ways, it is self-preservation.
Hmm.
And so we need to remember that as they become teenagers, that no says, I need to be my own self. I need to be separate from you. And we need to respect that no at times and be able to pull back and go, okay, what's really under the surface and what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in the example that Nina just gave about college applications, mm-hmm. we've been there. And I've thought, well, you have to apply for scholarships. You need to apply for scholarships. Oh, you want to go to school with no scholarships.
Right.
So there's a real tension point here for parents.
Well, and, you know, you got to keep the goal in mind. So do I have to have this done this second, or can I work through this relationally and get off the timetable that I had because mm-hmm. it was scheduled for Thursday and this isn't done yet and I'm panicking and I want to stop thinking about it. But really what I need to do is figure out what's really going on here. And with my son, we had this conversation and I said, so what's really keeping you from doing that? What's pushing you the other direction? And it ended up being a conversation about how he was nervous about going to college.
Right.
And we had the best, most wonderful moment that would not have happened if I had kept nagging and fussing at him, and it would have caused anger and more conflict.
Anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And he's already stressed out because his life is changing. Mm-hmm. And so instead, I was just able to put my agenda aside and sit down and say, what's really going on here?
Right.
And, you know, when we detach from the emotion and breathe and remember, it's not about the college application. It's not about the grades. It's not – those are symptoms.
It's hard to hear, though.
It is.
It's hard to hear.
Well, and I appreciate that. I still want to know, though. Did he apply for college?
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
He applied for scholarships.
And it was on his terms, and he did it his way.
I asked him. I said, so what can we do that's win-win here? Because we really need you to do this.
So asking questions. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah. And letting him control – the process in a way that was comfortable yeah. for him. And he says, well, I'd like to do it this way. And he came up with a little plan. And I said, okay, so how can I support you in that? Because I'm worrying about it actually happening.
I'm smiling because that's a good thing.
I was just honest with him. I said, I'm worrying about this happening. So how can I ask you? And so he gave me words to say, when to say them. And, you know, I checked in with him. And it was really well done. Beautiful, in fact.
And in your book, what I love, you've structured it around these dares mm-hmm. toward the parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these 40 dares, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we'll touch on those. We're coming to the end of the program today, but let me hit one of them that we can talk about, which I think is the most important one, dare number three. And there it's how do we focus on God's vision for our child? And, you know, often, John, we're talking here at Focus on the Family about having that big picture in mind so that every incident doesn't direct you as the parent of taking the leapfrog that I described a moment ago, mm-hmm. that if they're not doing their homework appropriately or turning it in, that it doesn't mean they're going to be in jail.
And right.
So, but, you know, sometimes you begin to project that as a parent. If you're here, then, you know, the experts say your at-risk behavior is going to go up by, you know, X amount, and you start to panic. How do we keep the big picture in mind? And the fact that God will take us and our children through valleys at times in order to challenge those things that we believe, perhaps our strong-willed nature as a teenager, that there's a purpose in all of that and that we can trust God's hand is in it. How do you keep that big picture of God's plan in mind for your kid when maybe your desire is different from what God's desire is?
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, you know, we all have these expectations of our kids.
No, I have none.
You know, we just think that we know what they're going to be down the road and everything. You know, we go into this parenting thing like everything's going to be rosy. Oh, such cute little babies and we love them. And then they get to be teenagers and they start having their own minds. But we don't think about what is it we really want? What's the end goal?
Right.
And, you know, as parents, I think all of us, we're hoping that our kids respect us. We're hoping that our kids will come to us and that we can still influence them.
And that's more important than any grade.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's, and we forget to look at what's down the road. When they're adults, what do we want?
Mm-hmm. Right.
We want that relationship. We want them to come seek us out. We hope they'll come visit sometime.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes that's a little vague. When you look at it, and maybe it may be too personal, so I don't want to push you into a corner, but when you think of your own children, and Debbie, your kids are all in their 20s now, when you say, what am I hoping for? Relationship is obvious. What are those character attributes you're hoping for? What do you hope your 20-something adult child now is going to express spiritually, emotionally?
Well, there's lots of pieces. Hopefully they have a job. That's always in the back of everybody's mind is, oh, we got to have these college scholarships. We want this job out there. But it's about relationship. It's about their relationship with God.
First and foremost.
Absolutely. And we can do everything that we possibly can, hoping that they'll have that relationship with God if we model well. But then we have to also look at the fact that, you know, we aren't in control of all things. And we have to, at some point, let that child go and say, okay, Lord, this child is yours. I've done the best I can. And my prayer is that I will continue to be on my knees in for each and every one of my kids, and regardless of what their choices are, and that, you know, we can continue to have relationship. And, you know, we all want them to come back and say, oh, you know, I'm really struggling with whatever it is. Mm. What would you do?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, and I think, did you want to add to that, Nina? I see you're kind of coming out of your chair.
Yeah, you know, I don't want them living in my basement when they're 25. there's that whole thing. But really, I think the key is remembering they're not ours. The voice of the world is so loud, and we forget that these people do not belong to us. They're his. And so the parenting experience is a context through which we walk alongside someone else who is learning about God and working out his faith or her faith in daily interactions with other people, themselves, and us. And so if we can have a godly perspective because our relationship with God is solid, we're as solid as it can be and we're continuing to grow, it changes everything.
But you know, Nina, when you say that, those of us that are in the middle of it right now are going, that sounds good, but I'm kind of worried. And I think what we need to do is come back next time, talk about practically how we engage that child on the respect issue and other things to help give them the best platform for launch. I'd love to talk about delayed maturity and how prolonged adolescence may be as much a parent issue as it is a kid issue, and so much more. So can we come back next time and cover some of those themes as well?
Love to.
Absolutely.
Let's do that.
And I hope you'll be able to be with us next time. And if you've been inspired to work on your relationship with your tween or your teen, get a copy of With All Due Respect. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, I'm John Fuller, thanking you for listening to Focus on the Family.
I know that if you are in the throes of parenting teens, you would have appreciated today's discussion with Nina and Debbie. And there will be more from these wise and experienced ladies on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in for that. I think that the overarching instruction for us parents is that relationship is our number one goal, no matter how difficult that may seem. Perhaps you'll ponder over that a little today. And please also book your ticket for the Parenting World Changes event with Mandy Hart. Mandy will also speak about the importance of fostering a deep connection with your child and the importance of a love-based rather than a fear-based approach. And she'll send you away with some tools and strategies on how to raise children that can impact our world for good. We'll be in Cape Town on the 1st and 2nd of June at Common Ground Church in Rondebosch and El Shaddai Christian Church in Durbanville. Pretoria on the 3rd and 4th at Midstream Methodist and Waterkloof Baptist Church, and Durban at Red Point Church in Pinetown and Victory Family Church in Empangeni. We're also hosting a morning ladies event with Mandy called Conquering Fear and Living Fully Alive. So look out for details on that. You'll find all the info that you need, and you can book your ticket on our website at safamily.co.za. Please tune in tomorrow to hear the conclusion of our program. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you back then, when we'll once again help you and your family thrive.